Happy holidays and welcome to the Closeness Podcast, your new sexual education. My name is Tari, I'm your host, and this is part one of what I'm calling several faux pas, a French word for a mishap or a misstep, something you'd like to correct or perhaps not do publicly. It's not about bashing any one in particular or any one gender, but it's about things that we can do to make life a little bit easier when we interact with each other. You can also think of it as an unusual episode about good manners. You know, a big part of growing this podcast has been trying to figure out the right tone, the right voice, to say things in a way that doesn't demand 100 disclaimers, yet the world we live in today seems to demand that. When we talk about polarizing subjects like sex, money, and power, the things that women should do or men ought to do, it really gets a little messy. In listening to several previous episodes, I was shocked by all of the disclaimers I felt like I had to add. So I think it's important to know now that I'm not going to go on and on about what I'm not trying to say or the point I'm not trying to make so as not to offend. As such, I've taken all the warnings, advisories, and precautions that were way too long and I've condensed them down to just a couple details here before we get started. Introspective question number one. Am I trying to change you and make you become a different person? Well, mostly no, but maybe a better person. We all do things that don't serve us and don't serve the people that we love. Number two, are you really doing your best in your relationship right now? Are we doing our best or are we just going through life in reaction mode? But when you're listening to this, you don't have to take it personal. You can peek around inside and see if there's some change that you'd like to make, or maybe you know someone for whom this podcast would be useful. Number three, all of us have attractive and unattractive behavior, and while some of these faux pas may be specifically directed towards women or men, not men as a personal or gendered attack. Number four, these aren't random thoughts or a couple things that have happened to me and my friends, and so I'm making an episode about it. It's behavior that I've observed thousands of times in my practice and in my personal life, and so I'm making an episode about it. And then finally, all of these faux pas hinder closeness, sex, intimacy, dating, fun, connection, excitement. These are a lot of things that people and women want. So everything that we're going to discuss today is meant to be seen through the lens and practiced with people who you are already involved with. Not someone you're not into, not attracted to, not someone who won't stop bothering you. This is for actual people that are in your life and you're either married to, sleeping with, dating, or spending time with. Oh, and one more thing and then we'll get started. Some of these, like this first one we're about to listen to, it deals with the kind of person that you are in society. That means how you act, behave, and talk with people once you're outside of the house or when you're not by yourself anymore. And the person we have to be in society is very different than the person we can be when we're alone and by ourselves. Whether we like to admit it or not, there is an expectation placed on us societally to be kind and respectful towards one another. And I hope these examples illustrate that. Faux pas number one is a little unusual, and it's so pervasive in our reality that no one really talks about it or observes it. It's called the reality TV effect, or maybe the Kardashian effect. The I like to ignore everyone around me while sucking all of the attention into myself effect. I'm screaming for sexual attention through every single one of my gestures, movements, and eye contact, but I'm giving you nothing. I don't know that people have done this intentionally or if it's just something that they've picked up along the way. Maybe they've imitated or mimicked other people and think that's what they should do. But it's like adding a fake or superficial layer, a mask, if you will, to every single one of your interactions. And everything that you say and do gets put through this filter before the world actually gets to hear you speak. That means you might add a layer of sass, making a silly face, rolling your eyes, purposely being difficult, combative, agitated, or irritable. We all wear masks in our interactions, but what this one does especially is it makes sure that you never show your insecurities, your vulnerabilities, your true feelings, and instead it makes it look like you're always coy, sassy, fussy, bitchy, arrogant, difficult, sarcastic, annoyed. And then on top of that, the only thing that you really show through this filter sounds or looks something like sex or sexuality or sexiness. Sometimes interacting with others comes down to how good or cute you think you look. The way you blink and stare off to the left and right, the gestures and pouty mouth that you might make, the way you might roll your eyes or, "Oh, you're so sweet." Yeah, no, you're cute. It's moving, talking, and carrying yourself in such a way that makes it look like your only purpose is just to fuck. An example of this might be to imagine someone who's doing a photo shoot for Instagram. And so they're not doing a whole lot of anything except standing there and looking sexual and desirable. But every once in a while, someone will do slightly more than nothing and just make some pretty silly and unusual faces. They might roll their eyes or make some silly lip movements, look in all directions, open up their mouth so it's just gaping open. Things that you'll never see when you interact with another human on a day-to-day basis who's being authentic. They might make kissy faces, or they may look surprised or shocked. Maybe they're laughing hysterically about absolutely nothing. Sometimes it's a face of arrogance, like "don't come near me" or "don't touch me," but they're being recorded when they're naked or their body's fully out on display. This first faux pas is taking what you might see in a manufactured picture, a look of shock, surprise, sass, arrogance, superiority, could also be sexuality and surprise, then using that attitude or energy with all of your interactions and with everyone that you interact with in the world. Maybe you're extra sassy all the time, or you walk around with an air of superiority everywhere you go. Or you're always drawing sexual attention to yourself as opposed to just having a conversation with someone and looking them in the eyes and being pleasant. It's taking anything that someone says to you or asks of you and taking any of your responses, and before you actually say it, you run your personality through a filter and not being your authentic self. And it's not that you have to be boring, and I'm not even suggesting that your real personality is boring, but I think people fear that if they're just authentic and normal, that it's going to be boring, or in our social media lives, it's not going to be interesting and dramatic. Another way to look at it is that you're adding a bizarre affectation. You're adding something to your personality that really isn't you, but you carry yourself like this all day. And so now you start acting different with everyone around you. And so one way to look at the world is through the lens of three different people. Number one, the person we've been talking about so far. All different kinds of prancing and hair flipping and filler language that's not really English. Laughs, screams, giggles, always having a wide mouth reaction about everything, always making something secretive and like you have to whisper about it to your friends. Starting sentences with, and then looking down at your chest while pretending that you're thinking, but it's really drawing attention to your body. Purposely not giving eye contact to anyone while simultaneously looking like you're ready for sex or for a porn shoot. Wearing outrageous amounts of sexual clothing and making yourself look like you're ready for sex at any moment of the day, but then being offended and acting aloof when someone views you as such. This can also come about as someone who's trying to demand and control so much attention from everyone else's eyeballs, but wants to give precisely nothing back in return. The second type of person we find in the world is someone who actually has real triggers with social anxiety or loud noises. They get nervous being out in public or extremely shy and reclusive. Maybe they struggle with depression or OCD. People in this group aren't choosing to have the reactions that they do. Often it just happens by default because it's something they haven't processed yet. It would be inappropriate to say, "Cheer up," or "Put a smile on your face," or "Just be positive." That would be ridiculous. And then finally, our third group of people act or comport themselves in a way that I would maybe just call what we hope would all be normal. That means the response that comes out of their mouth, their energy, their eye contact, the way they stand and carry themselves, it just feels pleasant and nice and, again, normal. There's no such thing as normal, but it feels that way. This could be someone who you might think is a little hippy-dippy, a little earthy, or a normal person just going about their day. Maybe a grandma or grandpa, they're just existing. They're not overly concerned with adding this extra layer to their personality, this filter that everything has to go through before you actually get to them. When they're out shopping and they take something off the shelf, they don't prance about or hold it in a certain way or stick their nose up high in the air or try to make themselves look more sexually desirable. They just read the label. They may not make eye contact, they might say hi, they might not, but when you do, it's a pleasant interaction. It's, "Hi, good morning, how are you, hello," and you move on with your day. They bump into you, they say, "Excuse me," or "I'm sorry," And when they work in retail, they take a genuine interest in helping you instead of worrying about how they look, obsessing over their shyness, being concerned with eye contact, not wanting to give the wrong idea. They understand that they're being paid to do a job and they just do it. And so when you talk to them, it doesn't feel like you're speaking to their sexual assistant, you're speaking to the person directly. And this is where authentic connection comes in. And by the way, it doesn't matter how confident they are or if they lack confidence, authenticity can always be seen. In this third group, appearances don't matter, whether they're beautiful or not, how tall they are, how attractive they are physically. Please, in life, be who you want to be, express yourself to the fullest, and live life on your terms. But know that every time you interact with a stranger in society, you have an opportunity to have a pleasant experience or an uncomfortable one. And generally, running things through this filter of arrogance or cockiness or ultra sexy or being above or being superior or being entitled doesn't really do your social score, if we will, any favors. So rather than trying to make others feel uncomfortable around you or making sure that you ignore everybody or staring down to the ground or adding an enormous sexual affectation to your words and energy, consider what being authentic might really look like and feel like in some of your daily interactions. Now, if we're talking about women engaging in this behavior, this tends to make men have one of two responses. It either solicits anger and frustration because men find it annoying, or it makes them want to have sex with you. And I think while there are a select few who want to feel desired by any and all men in the world, I don't think most women want most men to be angry or mad at them, number one, or only see them as a sexual object, number two. And again, I'm sure there are plenty of you who do, but I don't think it's the majority. So I'll ask you, true or false? Most women do not want a constant stream of never-ending sexual attention, including all of the men you find creepy, all of the ones you're not attracted to, and all of the ones that you ignore. And that group of men includes about, what would you say, 80 to 98% of the men you don't want attention from? So you want to ask yourself then, why carry yourself precisely in the way that's going to make all men give you the kind of unwanted attention that you're trying to avoid to begin with? And so many women say, oh, I dress this way for me. I do it to feel sexy and cute. But you have to realize in the world we live in, there is no such thing unless you are camping on an island by yourself with zero people, in which case I 100% guarantee you will not be dressing cute and sexy for yourself. The tricky part with this particular faux pas is that it's been so ingrained in some of us that it's all we know how to put forward. To have a totally sassy outlook all the time, or always being arrogant, or always being difficult, instead of who they really are. Now, I know there are many women out there who are rolling your eyes at this. Perhaps you don't get it, or you don't understand it, or you don't do this yourself, or know anyone who does it, and I applaud that. That's awesome. But this is a very big part of our culture. So what are some solutions here? You can start by revealing real, authentic, true parts of yourself to those who you feel safe with, and even sometimes strangers in stores or restaurants, just being kind, nice, respectful, normal, not even trying too hard to people please or to be too nice. An authentic comment, a real smile, a genuine laugh, and then start to become aware when you try to layer something extra on top of your communication style. Another recommendation is to try to go a little bit deeper than surface-level interactions and physical appearance to start to develop other parts of your personality. Often the world doesn't require this of very attractive people, and I know there are many intelligent, hardworking people in the world right now, but many people can get away with just existing and having the entire world just pour themselves at their feet, and their whole life can go by without having anyone ever question them on their BS. Trying to put others before you or imagining how it feels to be the person dealing with you or putting up with you can be a really powerful exercise. And then one final recommendation here is to make someone feel good about your presence, to make someone feel happy. You know, what if you made someone's day just through your interactions and the way you greet them, smile at them, or acknowledge their existence? What if you made someone else's day better instead of trying to have your needs met? And why am I going through the trouble to tell you all this? Because, friends, it feels so good to feel good. It feels great to authentically relate to someone. When we treat others well, when we take down our mask, when we're not trying to look a certain way and have a certain look as though a camera's on us, we get to feel what it's like to really be a human being. When you hear people talking about, it'd be so nice to see you smile, this is not a chauvinistic, machismo, misogynistic thing. It's actually a common courtesy that we do as human beings when we're out in public to let everyone know, hey, we're all good here. Everything's good. Everything's positive. No one wants any problems. No one wants any trouble or arguments. No one's trying to make you feel like you're a creeper. But I can't begin to tell you how good it feels when you have this baseline trust or sincerity when you interact with others. I can tell you in my own experience, the difference is staggering. When I interact with people who are grumpy, fussy, and difficult versus someone who just, even if it's a grandma, just passes by and says hi, oh my gosh, the difference is day and night. Now, many people like to make excuses for other people like, oh, they could have had a relative die, and you don't know what's going on in their day, and surely they have it much worse. But it's not always our obligation to have to be concerned about what someone else is going through when they are treating you poorly. So I invite you to tap into the vibe, to the energy of being a pleasant person more of the time. And I think the difference in how you feel on a day-to-day basis will blow you away. All right, enough of that. Let's move on into faux pas number two. A dear friend of mine named Lara has a wonderful name for this, and it's stealing other people's thunder. Men do this as well, so it is applicable to both sexes. And stealing someone's thunder comes up when you're in a fight, an argument, or a discussion with your partner, and you bring something to your partner's attention that you are hurting or bothered about, and somehow your partner manages to flip the entire thing around, make it your fault, while victimizing themselves in the process, and possibly leave you feeling even worse that you've somehow hurt them. That means you come to your partner and you say words like, you're hurting me. It hurts me when you say this. It hurts me when you do this. I'm in pain. This is causing me hurt. You're making me suffer. And I think that's one of the more personal and vulnerable things you can share with a partner when you bring your pain to them and you say, hey, you're really hurting me. Imagine if a young child, a 12-year-old girl, a 9-year-old boy, came to you and said, hey, it really hurts me when you say this. Probably any sane person in the world would stop what they were doing, hear the child out, and certainly not put them down for what they're going through. And so now think for a minute how you'd like someone to respond to you if you brought them your pain, and how you might respond to a partner who tells you that you're hurting them. How would you like it to go? Would you like them to hear you out, acknowledge you, talk about it, or would you like that person to steal your thunder, really stick it to you, flip out, turn the tables around, and actually blame or attack you and tell you that you're the problem? Maybe they've been bothered about something else for days and tell you what a bad day they're having and what an awful person you are. Or even more seedy, they turn around and say, you're always attacking me. I can do no good. Why do you want to be with me if you're so upset? I'm always in trouble. Why should I even bother comforting you? You're always bothered by something. How would you feel if your partner made you feel bad for even bringing something up? Or even worse, they play the victim themselves. Relationships like this are in a world of hurt. If someone comes to you and tells you that they're hurting, and then you turn around and flip it on them and play the victim card and say, I feel like you're attacking me by you opening up to me and telling me this. Or maybe you say something like, I feel like nothing I ever do is right. It feels like everything I do is wrong. It feels like I can't please you. Or maybe you burst into tears and you take something that your partner is expressing hurt about and blame it on them. This is particularly devastating to a relationship. This has the effect of the original person who was hurt keeping their feelings all to themselves, and then nothing changes. They just stuff it down. You might think you've solved this problem by not having to go within and not having to look at your actions. It really does only take once for resentment and frustration to start to build severely. I'd be remiss not to tell you about some other unique situations where someone might feel like their partner is doing all this terrible stuff, or they get the sense that they are, or they have an emotional reaction that they are, but really, partner A isn't actually doing what partner B is accusing them of. And this can get really dark really fast. So some people will actually hallucinate, invent, and make up stories, but because they feel it on the inside, they will act as though it's true. And then they will feel justified to use foul language like, you're a horrible person, you're terrible, you're an awful human, you don't deserve this, you don't deserve me, I hate you, blah, 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 blah. Yes, you could be in some really dark territory when both partners are feeling verbally assaulted from the other one, and partner B in this case feels like they're only defending themselves against the never-ending attacks and barrage from partner A, who's always complaining and upset that something is wrong. And this gets tricky because you get into feelings and whose feelings matter and whose feelings are valid and how are both people's feelings being validated. But one surefire way to get out of a situation like this is to not engage. If you find that someone is arguing with you or argues no matter what, or backs you up against a wall, or doesn't listen to what you say, or only provokes you, or is constantly telling you that you're doing things that you don't do, I'd recommend A, getting out of that relationship if you can, or B, disengaging and leaving the conversation as often as you can. Now, if you are a person who's being dishonest, if you are a person who's making your partner feel uncomfortable with shady activities, it is incumbent upon you to leave that partner alone and come around to honesty, transparency, having a real heart-to-heart, or getting out of that relationship because that person's not for you. Or it's incumbent on the person who's doing all the accusing to just get out of the relationship if you feel like you can't trust your partner. If you're always doubting them, if you're always having concerns, if you're always feeling mistrust, if you feel like you don't know which way is up and they don't understand what you're talking about, clearly for you, this person isn't healthy. But to bring things full circle, if every time your partner brings an issue to you, your response is to feel attacked or to flip it back around on them, to never be wrong, to never say you're sorry, to never see it from their side, or you feel like now is the appropriate time to bring up things that you've been bothered about for a year and air out your laundry list with your partner, this is never going to work either. In fact, pro tip, the worst time to bring up your issues and problems is when someone else is coming to you with their issues and problems. It's almost dismissive, like, hey, you know, yours don't matter, but let me tell you about mine. I think it's pretty rude and disrespectful. What are some solutions then? Number one, when someone is doing this to you, do your absolute best to breathe. Take a deep breath. Try to recognize what's happening to you and know that you may have to be the bigger person. It's very easy to throw a fit and say, I'm trying to tell you what's going on with me. But if you can say, listen, I hear this is important to you, but I feel like you're kind of turning the tables here and I'm trying to tell you what's going on with me. I want you to hear me. If someone can't hear that level of vulnerability, you've got a problem. If you're the person pulling these shenanigans, you've really got to listen. Listen to what's actually being said to you, and instead of taking it as an attack, and by the way, a lot of us have this really bad habit of taking everything as though it's attack or a criticism or a put down, and it's just not. Even if you feel that way, even if that's what you're hearing, even if that's not what they said, but it's what you heard, sometimes you have to do the internal work to hear a little bit differently or more accurately. And while we're on the topic of hearing, it's really important to hear how your partner, the one who told you how they were feeling first, is hurting. And unless you're some kind of masochist or abuser, you don't want to constantly be doing things that hurt your partner. And I know when someone's lashing out at you or being upset or playing the victim or even crying, it's very difficult to be the bigger person and stay calm. I don't condone behavior like that either. But if a person comes to you vulnerably and says, hey, you're really hurting me, there's actually something that you're doing that's causing me pain, I'd like you to stop it, they're asking you for help and they want to have a happy experience with you, or at least a positive one. If you choose the path of love, understanding, and closeness, you're going to move the relationship forward. You're going to make your partner feel safe and heard. And isn't that so much better than just being right, talking about yourself, or defending yourself? Faux pas number three is an interesting one because it blends in a little bit with female nature. It's being afraid, nervous, anxious, anxiety prone, and fearful around absolutely everyone and everything. It's assuming that the worst is always happening, assuming the worst of people's intentions, and carrying around an overabundance of fear about engaging with or interacting with others. And I will say, it is a natural female tendency to be more fearful, more anxiety prone, more nervous about life, more uncomfortable, generally speaking, than men. So in sharing this, I'm not trying to change or alter your natural disposition. But this is more about uncovering those areas where it's excessive or perhaps unneeded and unwarranted, where carrying yourself this way or being this way, if you do have a choice or you can tap into it, can really make a measurable difference in your life. All of us experience fear, but of course there is a difference between, generally speaking, a man walking to his car in a parking lot at night and a woman walking to her car. And it is hard for most men to understand what that is. And then when you have a child with someone, that fear often expands into something even greater. Sometimes fear comes about due to insecurity, sometimes from being hurt, and sometimes from fear of the unknown. But it also comes out in another interesting sense. And I would call that paranoia. To see if you have any of this paranoia stuff going on, you can do a simple thought experiment. You can reflect back on the 5 places you just visited, the last 10, whatever, the beach, Trader Joe's, work, an errand, the gas station, and just notice how you felt or how you interacted around the men who you passed. Did you acknowledge their existence? Did you purposely ignore them? Were you uncomfortable when it was just you and him? Did you feel confident, vibrant, and happy, like you could handle any situation? Or is there always an underlying fear, concern, or worry nagging at you? It's an offering and a recommendation to be a little softer, a little more trusting, a little more believing in humanity, not so that we can be happy, but so that you can actually relax more into your feminine, to be comfortable being a grounded, calm, centered woman who can move through the world without feeling scared dozens of times a day. I'm inviting you to ask yourself, do you feel unsafe or in danger in some way every single place that you go? And now, obviously, when we're talking about dingy dark alleys and unfamiliar territory and driving late at night and being in a part of town where you've never been or another country, sure, everybody feels that gripping fear of the unknown. But what about when you're just picking fresh flowers? And I often use the example of a farmer's market because it's open and bright and airy. What about when you're just at the supermarket or the beach on a hot summer day or at a festival or a party? Do you carry thoughts that men are all bad or men are trash or men are going to hurt you at any moment and you have to be super vigilant about any man who you pass? Do you have a sort of combative or accusatory attitude that someone meant to hurt you or meant to bump into you? Do you have an assumption that people have your worst interest in mind and they don't have your best interest in mind? It also comes out when you're getting to know someone and you don't know them that well yet, so you make up these elaborate, far-fetched stories about what must be true about this guy. He probably would do this. He probably would do that. And what a narcissist and sociopath and psychopath he must be. On the outside, it makes you appear concerned, scared, worried all the time. It almost makes you look like a prey animal. And I do believe it doesn't do many of us any favors to put off that vibe, whether you're a man or a woman. You know, interestingly enough, do you know one of the top fears that women fear on a first date? Anyone? Death. Afraid of being killed on a date that you're going on because you want to see if you might be romantically interested in this person. What's man's biggest fear on a first date? Well, that maybe she won't look as advertised, or she'll look completely different from her photos, which is also a big concern, but nothing in comparison to being fearful of your life. And here's the tricky part about stuff like that. Anyone can sort of get a monopoly on this by using this catchphrase, well, you never know. You never know. You could die. Something could happen. And while that may be true in some very obscure circumstance, anything can happen to anyone all of the time. But to use the excuse as you never know, it constantly keeps you in a state of disempowerment. And while I'm not suggesting that anyone who's going on a first date should just voluntarily go over to that person's house, I am saying that a fear of death might be a little extreme. So, I know you have to be vigilant as a woman, but I'm recommending not living your entire life in fear and being terrified every time you pass a man, because some things like this have existed in the universe sometime before. Or because you've experienced something like this already in your life. You've been hurt by another man, or you've had a bad experience with someone. You tend to carry that forward into your new interactions. Here are a few quick questions to help you out along your path. Number one, do you want to live your entire life in fear, being walled up and guarded all of the time? And number two, do you maybe see a connection in being fearful and worried and what that usually attracts into your life or the drama that ensues? And then number three, what kind of life do you want to live? Even if there are bad actors out there and bad characters and bad eggs who do pretty nasty stuff, what kind of life do you want to live? Always assuming the worst in people? Fear, mistrust, anger, concern, anxiety in your body? Or do you like the idea of men or a man surprising you, delighting you, championing you? All right, moving on. Faux pas number four is a pretty simple one. It's called, I'm never wrong, or I've got an insatiable need to be right, or I'd rather be right than be happy, or I constantly need to correct my partner on finite details. They said there were 14 grapes and there were actually 15 or maybe even 16. He said he went to dinner at 6 last night, but in actuality, he walked in at 6:30. I noticed something changed on his or her desk or table or floor, and I pointed it out, and because I didn't get an immediate response, they must be lying to me. I found a hair in the same shade as me, but I have a gut feeling that it's not my hair. Or maybe someone offers a thought, an idea, a sentence, and their partner immediately naysays it, poo-poos it, negates it. Someone expresses how they feel, and then the other partner just, without even acknowledging what their partner said, just starts speaking about how they feel and how it's totally invalidating the other person. A lot of not listening, a lot of having to be right, a lot of proving your point, a lot of thinking that you see the potential of the relationship, and so you're trying to mold him or her into what you think they should be because they're such a challenge. All of this is begging for a one-way ticket to divorce, separation, or just living in a household where there's no trust. You really have to get to the bottom of these things. And you can't tell someone who's always right and who needs to be right that they always think that they're right and it's a problem. They'll look at you blankly. Like, yeah. And for some of these issues, it does require getting help, whether therapy, coaching, or a mentor. But the best thing we can do, if you're listening to this and you realize you're someone who does this, is a lot of self-reflection and introspection and catching yourself when you respond. Am I fighting a battle every time I talk? Am I arguing and disengaging? Am I even listening to my partner? Do I do things that completely tune them out unintentionally, even though I think I love them? I think a lot can be said for self-reflection. Let's wind things down with a very simple to understand, but possibly difficult to apply faux pas. And that would be prioritizing anything that falls under the umbrella of social media over real human interaction. Are you at dinner and on your phone? Do you go to the bathroom to check and post your stories? Do you post everything that you do, everything that you say and breathe and eat? Do you find yourself scrolling and scrolling and scrolling? Do you leave your phone face up on the table? Do you have your phone with you everywhere you go so that you can quickly glance down and check it even when you're talking to someone else? All of these behaviors and more are going to make the person who you're interacting with, whether they're a lover, a friend, a husband, or a wife, feel unimportant, worthless to you, and it's very unlikely they're going to want to deepen any kind of connection with you. When you find that you have to check every alert that goes off on your phone, every notification, and glance down, listen, I get it. We are all addicted. We all have to work on our screen time. But when we have that rare thing these days called a date or time together or spending time one-on-one, even if we're on a couch relaxing, even if we're watching a show together on another screen, sometimes it's nice to just put the phone down or put it in an envelope or put it in the other room and charge it for a while or turn it off. Sometimes I even see people sleeping with their phones in their hands or on their chests. It's the first thing we grab in the morning when we open our eyes and we grab our phone instead of our partner or our pet. All of this takes away from and erodes closeness. Now, I'm not saying it's easy, and it would be far too difficult to quit cold turkey, but just bring it to your attention the next time you're spending time with a friend or even a girlfriend just chatting, hanging out a little bit, or you're at the gym or what have you. Notice how often you glance and prioritize and what might I be missing and what alert do I need to get to. This is particularly tricky for business owners. You know, me being one myself, it could be a client calling. It could be someone who wants to schedule an appointment. Those things happen. They're understandable. You can certainly prioritize windows, mornings, evenings, late at night, lunches, any time to get some good human connection. And while you're at it, maybe get outside too. And I think that's a pretty good place to wind things down for now before we jump into part two. These faux pas were a little more long form. I think in the next episode, I'll try to make them a little more back to back so we can cover more material. I want to thank you again for listening to what is a difficult subject. It's conflict. It's being called out on our stuff. Most of us can't stomach it or can't hear it for more than a few moments. And it's pretty challenging to get any of us to look within and try to stop the behavior that we're engaging in. But the secret is to replace it with a better habit or something that takes its place. You can't just stop something flat out, or at least it's very difficult to do so for most people. If you like what I'm doing here, or you've listened to some of the other episodes and you've been helped by the Closeness Podcast, you want to come in for some coaching, you can always do a Google search, Closeness Tari, Closeness San Diego, or visit CraveCloseness.com, or fill out an intake form online for an in-person appointment, or if you live elsewhere, you can do a virtual one. And then finally, don't forget, you can always subscribe on YouTube at youtube.com/closeness, or discover the podcast everywhere podcasts can be found. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.